Good morning, my friends out there in the universe of cyberspace. Whatever realm you're from, if I sound a bit off, if I don't quite sound awake, it is just two. It's 2:30 in the morning on Friday, May the 31st, 2019. And yeah, this is your friend Dan, and it's really early. And I guess you could say I have some insomnia, but that's okay too. Anyways, like all my recent previous podcasts, I'm trying to work off of a list of items. You could say discussion points. I don't know. The first item deals with some of you folks out there, but frankly, it deals with all you folks out there who listen. Back in this last winter, I came up against some resource issues. I basically ran out of money, and I almost, for reasons primarily of pride, ended up in the streets. And it's not something I'm proud of. It's not something I'm ashamed of, and it's certainly not something that I really ever want to get close to again. Because despite all the propaganda and despite all the bullshit, and there's a lot of bullshit around homelessness in this country, a lot of bullshit. The basic rationalization of just about every woolly-headed Seattle dweller is that the homeless people are there because they deserve it, or they're there because they're stupid. I'll let you in a little secret. This upside down, backwards society of ours devours people. It devours people, and it does not matter how fucking smart you think you are. It does not matter how hard a worker you think you are. This upside down, broken, and quite unfree America sucks your soul dry and devours people. And so, yeah. A lot of people have shitty attitudes about the homeless. But the bottom line is, this last winter, I was worried I was going to become homeless as well. And in a sense, measured by America's standards, I have been quote unquote homeless for a long time. It's just that there are levels. Like you could say that those of us who don't own homes are homeless. Even if we're renting an apartment. Of course, I'm stretching the semantics, but even the fact that I don't have a home, at least I have shelter. So when we say homeless, maybe we should say shelterless, because that's really what we're fucking talking about. Anyways, this last winter, and excuse me, my throat's a little scratchy. That must sound terrible with this new recording system, but I don't care. It's a stereo recording of my throat clearing. That's so fucked up. Such a French bulldog thing to do, though, really. I mean, maybe my spirit animal is the French bulldog, and maybe that's why I hate French bulldogs so much. Open topic. Anyways, this last winter. Man, I hate it when this happens. This last winter, I was in a tough spot, and I wasn't sure if I would make it, and I had some people who were there to help me. I had to be willing to accept help, which is not always easy. But there were some people there to help. One of those people was a sibling of mine. And I will say all my siblings are really cool, and pretty much all my siblings are there for each other. I mean, we're not perfect people, but we try to be there for each other to the extent that we're capable. I mean, like all big families, I think we probably have a lot of Sturm und Drang, as the Germans would say, a lot of storminess, but no, yeah. So there was a family member specifically who helped out a lot. And then there were some people online who didn't even know me. And really don't. I mean, if you know me from podcasts, I don't know. I mean, you have to be careful. I know there are a lot of people out there who say, don't be too paranoid and try to trust and all that. And I get it. But if you've listened to all my podcasts or some of my podcasts, you may have come across a podcast called The Goat King. And I don't want to go into specifics, but as weird as the Goat King podcast sounds, it's actually based on a real experience. And the experience was so fucked up that I really couldn't talk about it except through metaphor. You know, so that's why the Goat King is so weird. It is the closest I could come a year after the event of talking about it, and it still sounds so strange. And as weird as the Goat King is, much of it, like 78 or 86% of it, is 100% true, and the rest is whimsical bullshit. Now, you can try to figure out what the whimsical bullshit is if you ever listen to that podcast, The Goat King. But yeah, anyways, and so there have been people out there listening to my podcast, and there have been people who've donated money. And I know this sounds like a ramble, but I'm trying to say thank you, and sometimes my thank yous come out as a ramble. The specific thing I wanted to say is, and I believe this is from Chronicles, but I could be wrong. As you may know or might not know, I am a Christian. I believe in God. And I've also been studying the Bible. And there's portions of the Bible that deal with, and it's in the histories, that deal with a prophet. I believe we'd call him a prophet, or at least someone on a mission from God, by the name of Elijah. And one day Elijah was hiding out because God said, Elijah, you need to go hide out. So Elijah goes and hides out in some ravines, hides out, and he doesn't know where he's going to get his food, where he's going to get his water. But in the ravine, there's a stream. And as far as food goes, God has ravens bring him food. Ravens, basically big crows. And I will have to, and I'm not, you know, claiming to be like Elijah. I'm a jackass. My name is Dan. I'm an ordinary schlub. I program computers. I bitch and I moan. I have a fairly luxurious life compared to most of the world, and yet compared to a lot of people who are quote-unquote good, nice people of Seattle, I probably live like an animal. And again, I would say this reflects the upside-down, sideways reality that is Seattle, Washington, and man, there is no substitute. There really, really isn't. I mean that with the greatest degree of love and dread, that Seattle is so fucking strange. It used to be cooler, and I mean that in almost every sense of the word, but now Seattle is hot in almost every sense of the world of the word, and other words that sound the same. And it's a hot culture, and it's the culture of very haughty people, very haughty toddy. This is something that's fucked up, but it's reality. But the other reality is, this last winter, when I needed help, there were people out there, okay? And some of those people were here in Washington State, and some of those people were out there across the country. Some of those people were in Utah, and some were in Nevada, and some were in Alabama, and they were all over the place. Nevada, Arizona, you name it. People who reached out to me. And it wasn't all about the money, folks, so you know. The sustenance that Elijah would need as someone on the run, and we all feel like that sometimes, like we're on the run, the sustenance we need, it's not always about food. It's not always about having money for pot or beer. You know, it's not always about that. Sometimes the sustenance that we need is this idea that maybe at least one other fucking person on planet Earth gives a shit. And sometimes we get suckered into this view that we're totally alone. And it's not that difficult in modern society, especially when we sucker ourselves by putting so much energy into things that are not human. Like the ironically named device that you hold in your hand and you stare at all day. Like that. Anyways, to all of Elijah's ravens out there, to all you folks, you know, to to all you folks out there who interacted with me, who continue to talk to me, to you folks who were able to give me some money this last winter, I just have to say thank you. You're a blessing. I thank the Lord in heaven that you exist. I wonder in my heart if I deserve your generosity, but, you know, sometimes we should accept gifts and not look the gift horse in the mouth. You know, I thought about that quote over the quote or that statement, that idiom over the years, that don't look a gift horse in the mouth. It's a common idiom, platitude, whatever. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. And when you think about it, that kind of makes sense, because if the horse has bad teeth, yeah, it'll probably die, right? Because, you know, the horse has to chew the grass, and that's how it's going to survive, and if it can't do it, it won't survive. On the other hand, and this is the other side, the horse is still meat. So even if the horse won't survive, you can slaughter the horse, you can eat the horse. Nobody sees it that way, or maybe very few see it that way. I see it that way. I won't look a gift horse in the mouth, especially after day zero, because it's food. Anyways, next topic. I better mark this one off. Thank you to all you folks out there. I was thinking about the concept of Eden the other day. And when I say Eden, I mean Echo, Delta Echo, November. Eden. You know, the fabled place where the first people lived, Adam and Eve, in paradise. And, you know, as a Christian, and as someone who has a fair degree of respect for the natural sciences, I struggle with a lot of questions. Like, for example, you know, what is the true history of humanity? There is a history of humanity given to us by God in the Bible, and it's a history that really doesn't last that long. I mean, if you take the timeline of the Bible seriously, and I do. As a Christian, I can't just poo-poo it, and I won't go off on that, well, some of the Bible is allegory or metaphor. Folks, people used to say that about the Homeric tales until they actually discovered in the 19th century, you know, the ancient city of Troy and shit like that. So, yeah, there is a lot of broken information because these are stories that are passed down over thousands of years. And if you go back to Genesis, you're probably talking about a lot of oral history that then was written down. And maybe thousands of years or hundreds of years at least after the events occurred. And if you've ever played that game of passing information around a circle, you know, where you whisper in somebody's ear and then it comes back around again and it's just one sentence and you find out that the sentence is deformed from the one that you sent around the circle. Well, that's kind of the reality we're dealing with when we're talking about oral history. So yeah, I was thinking about Eden conceptually, and I was thinking about, I was thinking about Native Americans. And in a way, I gotta say, a lot of Native Americans, probably before Europeans arrived, a lot of Native Americans before Europeans arrived, oh my God, before they arrived, and I would say this is true of indigenous people around the world. If you look at the indigenous people, like, and there are still supposedly some tribes like this in the Amazon, but if you look at indigenous peoples around the world, they live a kind of existence that is so detached from all of our technological obsessions that one could almost argue that they do live, or at least have until recently, they have lived very close to a kind of Eden-like existence. Because when you think about it, Eden just wasn't about the infinite cornucopia. I mean, and that's gone. When we were expelled from paradise, when the expulsion occurred, the infinite cornucopia went with it. We don't get that any longer. But the other part of Eden is this sort of blissful ignorance. And I gotta say, you want to talk about, and when I say blissful ignorance, let's be honest about what I mean by that. I don't mean stupidity. I just mean that there are things that I would pray that most people never have to know. Like, I understand, you all probably know, I hope you know by now, I'm an anarchist. And even though I totally support your right to defend yourself with whatever firearm or knife or shiv or bat you have, I don't think you have a right to go around bullying people. And if you take that to the next level, I think war is bullshit. War is a racket. War is total bullshit. You guys know this from listening to me, that I am anti-war. It is bullshit, not because it's just because it's bullying and murder, but it's bullshit because you're forcing people at a point of a gun to murder each other. So it is so much bullshit. It's so much anti-liberty, anti-dignity, anti-human bullshit. War is bullshit, okay? There are things about war that I have never had to see, not up close. I've read about them, but I was never in combat. I was basically on active duty in those years between the wars. And I can't believe I just said that. The years between the wars. The fact that we have to think of recent American history in terms of years between wars is part of the thing that's so fucked up about it. During those brief years between the bombings, whatever. Anyways, there are terrible things that soldiers, men and women who serve in combat, there are terrible things that they see. I would never wish the actual experiences that cause PTSD upon people that don't have to experience it. Now, does that mean I'm condemning them to stupidity or ignorance? So when I say ignorance, I don't mean it's a bad thing. There are horrible, terrible things that I wish I did not know. I really do. There are times I wish I did not know them, and I can legitimately say that if I did not know them, I can't imagine my life would be worse. In fact, my life might be better. And I know you're going to say, Dan, that's so anti-intellectual. You're saying you're a know-nothing. No, that's not what I'm saying. You can't unknow things. Well, you can, but you really, you can't. You can't unknow things. You can obliterate your mind with alcohol. But once you've experienced the concept in a really deep way, it's difficult to get rid of it. And the thing about really terrible experiences is if the adrenaline kicks in, that memory will be etched in stone. And hence, you know, the flashbacks that occur to people with PTSD. So if you can imagine Eden, imagine it like that. Imagine Eden as a place where basically people did not have to have memories of things like nuclear bombs or memories of things like human trafficking, or memories of things like organized pedophilia, or memories of abortion, or memories of the mindfuck of where they tell you there's not enough Americans, so we need to have more immigrants, but let's also have lots of abortions. Or I'm Disney Corporation, and Alabama doesn't want abortions, but Disney doesn't really care if we go and set people's homes on fire, you know, in Syria or Libya. That's no big deal to fucking Disney. Just don't abort, you know, just don't keep women from being able to kill babies in Alabama. You see, this is the thing, folks. These people are terrible. And the fact that the Native Americans and the other indigenous peoples for a very long time did not have to be exposed to our European bullshit, and it's not just European, I should say civilization, or I should say the crocodile. Because for the most part, other than the Aztecs and to some extent the Incas and the Mayans, for the most part, a lot of the non-European peoples and non-Asian peoples and the people, you know, the people who are not part of what's called the major zones of civilization, for the most part, the indigenous, you know, non-city dwellers, the foragers, they were blissfully fucking ignorant of the crocodile, which is my fancy name for the government. Yeah, did they have organizations? Sure. But they didn't have the crocodile. Now, the Aztecs, they totally had the crocodile. And so did the Mayans and probably the Incas. And from what I've read about the people of Easter Island, they went completely down the crocodile road. But the Cheyenne Indians, you know, the coastal Salish, they didn't really have that. They had organization and they had culture and they had a lot of freedom if you think about it, but they didn't have the crocodile. So when people think about Eden, I think that in some ways, when we arrived, when the Europeans arrived in North America, and frankly in other places like North America, these places that had been up until about 500 years ago untouched by Europeans or untouched by civilized people, European, Asian, or whatever, in a lot of ways these places were like Eden, okay? And what's more important is that even though there was struggle and death, there was a blissful ignorance of the horrors that were to come. You know, I don't think it's accidental that Europe is east of the United States, is east of Eden. So yeah, that's the thing. I don't think that the United States was Eden. I don't think that these indigenous areas of people who live a hunter-gatherer existence that still exists today are Eden. That's not my point. But I do think that we have an insight into the history of humanity if we think in these terms. That part of this whole notion of being in paradise is also to some extent being in childhood. You know, the Lord in heaven is wise on many levels, wise in ways I will never understand. But one way in which his wisdom probably manifests itself is the fact that this story is a story of growth. There are many themes in the Old Testament, but one of the themes of the Old Testament is a story of learning and growth. And yeah, it's not always really fast. The chosen people really do make a lot of fucking mistakes, as we all do. I mean, I am a sinner. I make mistakes probably every 15 milliseconds when I'm awake. But I'm not going to give up on myself. Anyways, I was thinking about Eden, and it was weird. And the other thing is this, is that how can you go back to Eden? I don't think you can. It's like saying, I want to go back to childhood. You can't go back to that. And also, this isn't meant to be patronizing. You know, it's like I said, I can't really not be the person I am. But would I really be unhappy if I lived that other kind of life, the life of a hunter-gatherer in one of these, you know, indigenous cultures of North America that might still exist? Would I be happier if I was simply born that way? And I gotta say, in many ways, I probably would be. I think that this modern industrial civilization, as stated, really does suck your soul dry, and it's only getting worse. And yes, they're giving us drugs. Yes, there's a new pharmaceutical. You know, I've got my first in-person interview podcast coming up this weekend, and try to be humorous, and talk about pharmaceutical advertisements. But yeah, they got drugs for everything. They got Ajovy, and they got Belsomra, and they got Entresto, and they got Bajovix, and Remuli 7, and all types of crap that they can shove down your mouthpipe and convince you that everything's okay. But that's not the same as Eden. Anyways, I'm gonna scratch that topic. Scratching the topic, moving on, boys and girls and other genders and intersectional, bidirectional human junk occurrences that exist within those places where people think about their junk. I have to say the politics of junk is really, really getting boring for me. This is a bit of a side topic, but here's Uncle Dan's simple rules regarding your junk. And let me first define what junk is. Junk is the stuff we cover with underwear and pants. And in the case of women, a bra. Junk is the stuff that is related to sexuality. What you do with your junk is your own fucking business, as long as your junk is not, you know, coming in contact with animals or children or people that don't want to have sex with you. As long as you're having intimate relations with adults in a voluntary consensual relationship type thingy, I mean, you know, it's your business. If you're sinning, if you're cheating, guess what? That's between you and God. But as long as you're doing it the way people should do it, which means in fucking private and not like a fucking pigeon in the middle of the street crawling on the back of somebody, as long as you're doing it in fucking private, I don't give a fuck. But this is when I get upset. When you do what I don't do, you take your junk out in public and then you pretend it's a political philosophy. Go fuck yourself. It's your fucking junk. Okay? God is very humorous and he gave you junk. And if you want to obsess on it and turn it into a political philosophy and maybe even have a hat designed like your junk, holy fuck, what the fuck's wrong with you? Anyways, next topic has to do with a previous podcast. Because I felt like I needed to cover the issue, not again, but to talk from the other side of it. Which means, you know, yeah. So anyways, on a previous podcast, I talked about the idea that the human civilized world might be so close to catastrophe for all sorts of reasons that the people that run the world, quote unquote, those people might choose to tip the table over. And the quickest and easiest way, if you believe what you're told, to tip the table over at this point in human history would be some type of nuclear war. But here's the other side of the equation, or the other perspective maybe, or rather another angle. Because I gotta say, that particular podcast, there was a lot of the, how can I phrase this? There was a lot of the secular, non-religious Dan talking. Because here's the thing, if you see the world in purely secular terms, then some of these issues are quite bleak. It's like Guy McPherson. If you see the world in purely secular terms, then what Guy McPherson, and I'll leave it to you to research this guy, because I've spoken about him before and I don't want to go too deep into it. But here's the thing, if you are an atheist, and that's okay, and if you are an atheist and you listen to Guy McPherson, it's fairly bleak. It's like watching, you know, Lars von Trier's Melancholia. It's very, very dark, bleak shit. It is literally end of the world shit. And it's not end of the world in 100 years, it's end of the world in like maybe 5. So yeah, the other side of this is the side that deals with, well, maybe there's more to the world than just stuff, you know, and maybe there is a God, and perhaps God loves us. You know, last week in service, our minister talked about, and I want to pronounce this correctly, Hesed, and I believe that's in English spelled Hotel Echo Sierra Echo Delta. Yeah, Hesed. Hesed in Hebrew, according to our minister, I'm no expert in Hebrew, Hesed means the undying, indestructible, really infinite love of God. That God's love has no limits. There isn't a limit. Like, you can't say, like, I used to have a hard time praying for stuff. I could pray for other people. But it wasn't until this last winter that I started praying for myself. And I'm going to tell you something. I spent a lot of years as an atheist telling people, giving people rationalizations for why there is no God. So whether I deserved the help or not, that was never the issue. You know, it's like the minister said, it's be careful to ask the Lord in heaven for what you deserve, because actually most of us, especially in the United States, we might not be happy about what we get. But the thing about Jesus, the thing about the Lord in heaven, is he doesn't do it that way. He doesn't say, well, Dan, you deserve to go to hell because you spent a fairly large portion of your adult life telling people there was no God. He doesn't work that way. And his love is infinite. So, do I think there's a possibility that the powers that be could trigger a nuclear war? Yes, I do. I'm not backing away from that prediction. But I also think that this is all part of God's plan, at least the portions that are not under human control. Yeah, humans can be stupid and start a nuclear war, but God has power. God can influence people. God can talk to people and get them to say no. This doesn't have to be a parting of the sea miracle. This only would have to be the ordinary kind of miracle where God touches the heart of the people that would do the work to make sure the nuclear war was successful. So this is also a way of getting through this fear and also maybe dispelling it. The Lord in heaven can touch people's hearts. And all this system, you know, I talk about the crocodile, but ultimately the crocodile is just made of people under the sway of a demon. Really, I mean, it's really just people who are in a trance. And if you break the trance, the crocodile starts to die. But how do you break the trance? And that's the thing. So yeah, you know, I just want to say that as bleak as that podcast was, and it was quite bleak, was quite dark, I do believe God loves us. And I do believe, despite our stupidity, and we have, as infinite as God's love is, human stupidity is nearly so. But as bad as we can be, and as stupid as we can be, and as many things as we've done that are deserving of chastisement, there is chesed. There is this infinite love of God. As it's not free. You have to have faith. You have to try to live according to God's principles, and it's not easy. It really isn't. You have to pray for discernment. You have to pray. And I do think you have to congregate. You know, yeah, some of us end up hermits, but even the hermits had to meet with people. We wouldn't have heard about them. Even the hermit prophets had to meet with people just to pass words around, just so people could record what they thought. So even to you hermits out there like me, the people that live alone a lot and don't like to interact, you still need a congregation to be a good Christian. It's not easy. It's not easy. I know. Sometimes other people scare the fuck out of me. They really do, especially at Willy Wonka's. Willy Wonka's, oh, you want to talk about human dread. I mean, and it's getting better. It is actually getting a little better. But the first week or two working at Willy Wonka's, I had nothing but dread. The last 10 minutes up to 40th Street, you know, where we pull off, and I would end up walking to the mixer at Willy Wonka's and getting my little Willy Wonka shuttle ride, my Wonkavator. Those 10 or 15 minutes on the 545 filled me with dread. God's love is infinite, folks. But our human stupidity is also infinite. So it's something to keep in mind. Next topic. We're going to move on to the next topic. And if you hear a creaking noise, that's my chair. It rocks and it creaks. So, a few months ago, when people were reaching out to me and I was talking to people, a particular person, and I would call this person a troll, because I had a couple trolls. I had one troll. I had one troll this last winter who donated $1 a month, and then he wanted to talk to me and have exchanges that would take an hour of my day to resolve. Yeah, that troll who knew I was an anarchist told me I should become a public school teacher. I don't want to go into that troll. There was another troll who told me that I had borderline personality disorder. And so that we can talk about borderline personality disorder, I'm going to go to the Google Vader and look it up. There we go. Borderline personality disorder is a personality disorder that typically includes the following symptoms: inappropriate or extreme emotional reactions, highly impulsive behaviors, a history of unstable relationships. I'm going to let you in a little secret here. BPD, from my perspective, might be bullshit. And I'll also tell you something else. The motherfuckers who put together the DSM 4 or 5 or whatever we're on now, 6 or 7, these diagnostic manuals of psychology, this is as much about selling drugs, and now I mean the pharmaceuticals, as it is to have anything to do with helping people. But what borderline personality disorder looks like to me is people in distress. People in distress have extreme emotional reactions. I'm going to lay out a little secret, folks. When my sister Nancy was dying of cancer, I had extreme emotional reactions. I wanted to punch the doctor, the oncologist of my sister, in the face because he was lying to her at the end of her life, which was also technically malpractice. I didn't, though. So actually, even though I had an extreme emotional reaction, I didn't actually do anything. So maybe, I don't know, maybe I don't have BPD. Maybe when they say extreme emotional reactions, they mean if I'd punched the doctor in the face. But I didn't. I simply felt like I wanted to. The next one's highly impulsive behaviors. Guess what? People in distress are impulsive. I'll let you on a little secret, folks. If you drive outside of San Francisco, well, just drive around San Francisco. If you drive around Seattle, get outside, go to the country. See the whole country. You're going to see a lot of people in distress, and you'll also see a lot of impulsive behaviors. And then the last one's my favorite because it totally deals with the wreckage of contemporary America. A history of unstable relationships. Folks, how many people do you know have been divorced? Or better question, how many people do you know have been in stable relationships for more than 10 years? That's a better fucking question. A history of unstable relationships. Folks, borderline personality disorder looks like a catch-all bucket for people that have been through hell, some type of hell, are dealing with it the best way they can, and now some pharmaceutical company or some fucking cognitive therapist or some jackass who wrote a book now wants to make a buck off your pain. I don't know what to tell you. Do I have BPD? I don't know. You know, there's this other one called oppositional defiant disorder they came up with, I think, under the Obama administration or sometime around there. OPD, oppositional, yeah, no, oppositional defiance disorder. I guess ODD, yeah. Anyways, odd. Yeah, they came up with this other one that basically sounds like one from the 19th century called drapedomania. Drapedomania was a psychological illness that psychologists, thinkers in the field in the 19th century came up with, early 19th century, maybe the 1840s, for describing why African Americans would want to flee their slavery. That it was a sickness that Frederick Douglass wanted to flee his oppression, that he was sick. He suffered from drapedomania. Well, folks, I also suffer from drapedomania. Yeah, I know, I'm not being beaten every day. I know, I don't have whipping scars on my back. My soul's pretty much fucking shredded. At least they tried to do that. And if you gave me a choice between the miserable, soul-shredding bullshit of Willy Wonka's or spending 5 minutes at the pool being whipped every day, I'll be blunt, I'll take the fucking whipping over Willy Wonka's mindfuck, and that's every corporation. I will take going to the fucking pool in the public and being whipped to the mindfuck of working in a contemporary corporation. Anyways. Yeah, BPD. I don't know. Maybe I have it, maybe I don't. But what it does sound like, in my opinion, is a really fucking good way to take the human trauma and damage of the recent decades that really does have a cause. It's not magic and it's not genetics. It's economics and history. I think this is a really convenient way to bucket up all the people, all the human wreckage, and say, oh, you're sick. Your broken lives and your broken existence, that's a disease. That's your fucking problem. Ignore the fact that we've completely obliterated the U.S. economy. Ignore the fact that we live in an upside down war system. In fact, the only party in America now really is the war party. Even all the intersectional genders want to blow fucking shit up. Ignore all that. And then take the human wreckage that's been left behind and call them diseased. Yeah, that sounds a lot like how we treat homeless people, folks. And here's the thing. That's the first step along the way. Before you have death camps, you have to do this shit. You have to dehumanize people. You have to put them in buckets of sickness. That's step A. Step A is saying the homeless person spontaneously arrives and is simply a disease that has to be cured. Step A is saying people who are human wreckage, who are emotionally destroyed, well, that's their fucking sickness. That's step A. Step B, once you dehumanize people, is putting them in places. Just a little thought. Next topic. Okay, so at Willy Wonka's, I'm doing a lot of work with the cloud. And if you don't know what the cloud is, simply put, the cloud is a kind of heterogeneous computing model, whereby you can take some set of physical servers and treat them like a generalized, configurable set of computers. That's basically what the cloud is. It's kind of like the virtual machine paradigm, but taken to the next level. The bottom line is, with the cloud, you can configure resources, you make requests, and then you leave it to the cloud to provide those resources. In that sense, it's also declarative. Now, all this being said, I'm doing some work with the cloud, and I was pointed towards somebody that was ostensibly a cloud expert. And what he turned out to be, and of all the special people you run into at places like Willy Wonka's, what he turned out to be was a knowledge hoarder. I hate knowledge hoarders. Okay, folks? Listen, how can I phrase this? It is good that there were no patent trolls in the 17th century. Because if there were, I think they would have taken Newton's calculus and patented it. It wouldn't be everybody gets to learn calculus. It's you're going to pay a fee. You're going to pay a fee to do derivatives or to do integration. I mean, think about that for a second. If calculus, if the field of mathematics we call calculus had been patented by a patent troll. Well, there's a dude at work who's ostensibly a cloud expert. And I was asking him a question yesterday. And the question wasn't the kind of question that dealt with anything that I would consider remotely proprietary. But his response was, yes, I could help you, but that information is related to a project I'm working on, so I can't talk about it. And it's like, dude, I'm not asking you about your fucking project. I'm asking you about something that ought to be generalizable and something you can communicate. And that is, how do I script, through PowerShell, a complete creation of a virtual machine environment that isn't a toy example? I've done the toy examples. You'll find them online. But the actual deep examples of doing the deeper drive resource configuration, those examples are hard to find. And frankly, the export template shit from the Azure cloud is buggy as fuck. In fact, Azure's still buggy as fuck. Let's just get that on the table. People who, you know, Azure's fine. I deal with it. I gotta be honest with you. I'm beginning to think it fits into the same category as source control called Git and other stupid shit we're doing, which means probably busy work, but that's a whole nother topic. But yeah, I don't know if the cloud is helping, but it certainly exists, and it's buggy as fuck. And so even now, even today, when it comes to Azure API programming, you have like two or three competing APIs, two or three different ways to script out resources. And they're all kind of buggy as fuck. And there's a lot of unknowns and there's a lot of hidden knowledge. This is the thing. When I say buggy as fuck, I don't necessarily mean the code always blows up, but there's a lot of secret knowledge. And if you're going to sell a product like the cloud and you're going to keep a lot of secrets, that's fucked. Anyways, this dude at work, He sort of just said, you know, I cannot talk about this, and then just blew me off. And so I treated him like a dead phone line. Like, if I can't get help from you, and I ask twice, the likelihood that I will ever ask a third time is way less than 2%. So the chances that I will come by that guy's fucking office again is virtually zero. He was not very helpful. He was supposedly the expert on Azure in our group. And either he is not an expert or he just enjoys keeping a lot of information to himself. And that's fine. Here's the thing, folks. If you want to solve problems that are not trivial as a human being and you want to cooperate with people, part of cooperation is sharing information. Oh my God, Dan, did you just say you're going to give away information for free? Yeah. Because that's how we get through all this. That's part of how liberty works. And that's why free speech is so important. If you want to get back to like one of my favorite topics of free speech, listen, I'll let you in a little fucking secret. One of the reasons why free speech is important is because there are a lot of ideas that we do need to communicate to each other. We are social creatures. We are social animals. God created us to work together voluntarily, not with a spear to our back, not with a gun to our head. God wants us to work together. We should work together and cooperate, and part of that is sharing ideas. So yeah, the Mr. Azure information hoarder, he will probably never ever hear from me again. And that's as much as I want to say about that fucking topic. Although it's really getting late in the game here. I don't know. I'm thinking that I may have to close out this podcast and start another one. I think the two-hour podcasts are a bit problematical, and I have no doubt that people, I don't know, man. Maybe I should just close this one out here and then start another one. So, anywho, before I close that, I don't know what to say. I am probably going to do another podcast here. It will probably show up. I'm up so early. I'll probably end up doing two of these before work. And so, you know, do I like waking up at 2:30 and doing podcasts? No. But since I've started this job at Willy Wonka's, I just haven't had the energy. I'll admit to this. I get home at night, and all I want to do is degauss my soul. And so, you know, when I say degauss, if you remember the old style, if you're old as fuck like me, and you remember the old style monitors, they used to have a little button, some of them, to degauss them, to sort of, you know, remove the excess EMF that's collecting and the coils and whatnot around the, you know, the fucking cathode ray tube, blah, blah, blah. So the point is, there used to be a button that would degauss the monitor. And so I come home at night, I feel like I have to degauss my mind, degauss my soul. But truly, it's not healthy. I get home, I basically on my way home, I grab a six-pack of beer. Now, at least it's not a half rack. And at least it's not a fifth of whiskey. And that's pretty much the maximum. But the truth is, I could do with a lot less than that. In fact, I could probably do with at most a beer a day. And probably no beers every day. But again, I get home at night, I grab a six-pack of beer on the way home, I basically turn on the music, and it's the only way I can get rid of the fucking shit in my head from that day at Willy Wonka's. So it's only, in some ways, it's only times like this, or maybe on the weekend, that I have enough peace of mind to do podcasts right now. So there it is. I'm going to close out this podcast. I hope you guys are doing great until you hear me again. And be careful out there, you fucks.